Jeff Dunn broke a guitar string.
Wasn't it good when he came back in? Let's give him a hand for getting out there and getting that string and getting back there. I'll tell you.
I could have stayed gone.
Yeah.
I could have found another group to pick with.
Yeah, you've done that. I thought I was going to lose him there a while ago. He's picking with everybody. But that's what it's all about. We like to share our picking with everybody, I'll tell you. And we're right over here. We're building Manlins. Not over there, but we'll show you the best way we know how to get started on them. And I'm sure that it'd be some of you that would take up interested in it. And I do my very best. I show you everything that I have. I have tore them apart, sawed them up, thrown them away. And we still trying. So I got three of them. Oh, I think it's pretty good, don't you, Jeff? You think they all right?
Yeah,
huh?
Man. Can't
everybody.
Test,
test, test, test, test.
While kneeling by a bedside in the heart of the hill, mammy there prayed her blessed lonely time. She was talking there to Jesus while everything was still. Yes, I heard my mother call my name and pray. Yes, I heard my mother call my name and pray. She was pouring out her heart to Jesus land. And I gave my heart to him, and he saved my soul. For he heard
out for she's going to, okay, good. I'll tell you, it's kind of hot and these instruments is getting a little bit out of tune, but we're going to carry right on here and won't take but just a second for Virgil and Jeff to wind them strings up just a little bit. You had to put a new one on there. And anybody knows about picking, you have to kind of stretch them a little bit to get them to hold up there. And I'll tell you, when they get back here, they're going to pick this banjo and this guitar that you're going to say, well, it was all right to take a 5-minute break. Is that how long is it going to take y'all to get in tune, son?
Yeah,
Ding, 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 ding.
Well, between the breezes, that's pretty good. Y'all are doing real good. I want you to know that right now. We're going to do Coming Down. Will that be all right, boys? Call it back on the farm sweat. I haven't ever worked this hard in all my life, have I, Mama?
I was told
that. Oh, the truth came out finally. Jeff's been with me for about, this is Jeff Scutchfield. We'll do it real quick here. Jeff Scutchfield been with me for about...
Since 75.
And Jeff, Virgil's been with me for 32. Mama, I ain't gonna tell you that because you'll figure out how old we are and we don't want you to know our age. What about that?
Here's a story, son, in the Holy Book we find, how Jesus stood alone. False accuser, did they found the man who wore the scarlet pearl. Purple robe, my Savior wore, oh, the shame from evil. right. We'll tell you. Jan's going to be here just in 1 minute. She's coming right now. One more. All right. I'll tell you what. Let's tomorrow's Sunday, so let's do this one right here, Brother Jeff. This will be a real good one. And I tell you, everybody loves this one right here. It's called Amazing Grace. Everybody's heard of Amazing Grace, ain't they? Listen how Virgil, oh, he plays some twin stuff on the banjo. Jeff does a real good job on the guitar. And me and Mama, we just hanging in there the best we can. Amazing Grace about Jesus, Brother Virgil. Will that be all right? With us, we'd be more glad to shake your hand, tell you about the good things, and I appreciate you coming, and I hope that some of you pick up these mandolins and guitars and just pick them and pick them and pick them and pick them and bless people. Let's give Jan a hand as she comes. We appreciate y'all coming in with us. All right.
If you've been with us, you know that we've been talking about the working side of the woods, about the logging and the milling and all of the things that people do to make their living out of the timber industry in the northern part of Florida. But, of course, if you live in this part of the country, you don't use the woods just for work. You use it for fun, too. And we have some folks here for the next half hour, in fact, some of them for the next hour, to talk about that. My supervisor was just telling me we can call this part how you catch it and what you do with it when you've got it. In other words, what we're talking about is hunting and fishing, and then a little bit later we'll talk about some of the foods that you've got once you do that hunting and fishing. Let me introduce our participants while we wait for a few more folks to come in. The first person I have on my right is Audra Terry. She's a worm grunter. Well, she does other things too, but that happens to be her claim to fame for today's program. And you'll find out more about that if you don't know already just in a minute here. Then next we have Mr. W.R. Palmer, who is a fisherman. And he does other things too, but that's his claim for right now. And then Mr. Bobby Johns, who has been doing some carving, which you may have seen. And he has some real interesting fishing stories. He has a different way of going about it. And then down at the end, we have Mr. Arthur Bailey, who's a cruiser by profession, but he also gets out and does a lot of hunting and fishing. And they'll all be telling you about different aspects of that. Let's start with Audra. Explain to folks what this worm grunting is and what it's good for.
Okay. Worm grunting, to get your worms for your fish. And I can't even talk today. But you take a wooden stake. It doesn't matter what kind of wood that you use, just a wooden stake, drive it into the ground, take a car spring, a truck spring, a 2x4, 2x6, it doesn't matter, a brick bat. And you drive the stake into the ground and you just rub it across the board or the iron or the brick bat across the top of the stob. This causes a vibration in the ground and the worms come up. And you just pick them up. Put them in a bucket. Of course, we take them to a wholesale bait distributor where they pack them and ship them out to different places to sell for the fishermen to buy. We leave early in the morning. We're out there by daylight, usually about 3.5 hours getting our bait and then coming in. It's a lot of hard work because it's rewarding. It can be fun. And I enjoy fishing, so sometimes I get to use what I go out and get. So that's basically what you do.
Mm-hmm. Who all actually uses earthworms? What kind of fishing do you do with earthworms?
Okay, shellcracker fishing, cat fishing, brim fishing, bass fishing, most any kind of fish.
Mm-hmm.
You can get used with those and... just most any kind. I mean, you can fish with earthworms and catch most any kind of fish that you want to catch out of the river.
So, Mr. Palmer, do you ever use her worms? Do you get what kind of fishing do you do? Tell folks about your specialty.
I was called upon several years ago to do an article for the Florida Sports, well, I guess it was the Florida Wildlife Magazine, which was particular in one respect. It was catching suckers. And I went back and researched the whole thing out and followed some of the leads of the old people that did it for years. And it's very peculiar in that we use what we call a sucker weir, or a wire as it's called nowadays. Back in the older periods of Florida, when Florida was being developed, the homesteaders didn't have wire as we know it now in the form that it's in. So they waited till the spring of the year when the creeks were rising slightly and the suckers were coming up to spawn. And they go in there and drive white oak stobs across these flat, sandy crossings in the creek that weren't more than maybe 2.5 or 3 feet deep. Then they would weave in white oak splits and grapevines on the upper end of it. And then down about 30 feet, they'd put another, what we call weir or wire, across it. But they'd leave a small gap in the middle or the side, mostly on the deep water side. And they would sit down along the creek bank at night until the sun went down. When the sun went down, they would open that little gap in that net out there with a stob or some kind of a rock to hold it open. Then they'd all sort of get back over in the sand hill where the fish couldn't see them. A lot of big old roaring fire in there. Sit back and tell tall tales and ghost stories and maybe suck on a little white lightning or something like that to keep the spirits up, because back in that particular early springtime, you're going to have a lot of frost on the ground. And it gets pretty chilly sitting around waiting for them suckers to sort of swim up that there stream. They have what they call the first run of suckers, which usually comes a little bit after sundown. And what you do, you get some young boy in the bunch there, and you get him to sit down along that creek bank real quiet, because not only is this a rites of spring, but it was sort of like a rites of passage, too, for a young man to sort of move on up into the ranks of manhood. So you put him on down in that creek bank down there and let him sit there real quiet, like, until he heard a lot of splashing out there. But he come back up and said that the suckers are in the wire. Suckers are in the wire. So they'd pick out the most likely-looking young candidate and tell him to go out there and close that gap in that bottom wire so them suckers couldn't get out of that trap. So that young lad, he'd get on back down there and he'd wade into that water. Now, mind you, this is about sometimes 25 degrees. I think Arthur can verify that. That's my brother-in-law down there. I know he's been on them sucker creeks, too. So he eased on down there, and that boy get into his waist in that water out there, and he probably had to get down there and get that there stall about and let that sucker wire down, trapping them suckers. Well, that was a signal then for everybody to go back up there and get their lighter knot stobs. Back in them days, you know, they didn't have these Coleman lanterns and three-cell flashlights and butane gas torches. But they used lighter knot stobs mostly. Not only that, because it gave them a softer light. You get down that creek bank at night, and it's black pitch, and you can't see diddly squat. You put on that big old three-cell flashlight, and you got nothing but reflection back in your eyes from the water. So they get that there lighter knot torch, which is a real soft light. And they'd ease down there, you know, and they'd look. And here'd be these suckers laying out there in that real shallow spot, if and they were lucky. Well, that sort of signaled a free-for-all then, because everybody was in the creek, and the ones that had gumption enough, the ones that was crazy enough, they'd jump in there and start grabbing them suckers out of there and stuffing them in burlap bags. When they got them, they would holler out, "Oh, I got one, I got a horny head, or I got a flat head, or a slick head." And stop me, Arthur, if I'm wrong. Ain't that old horny head, ain't he the male sucker? Yeah, he's that male sucker. He gets in there and he roots out that gravel, gets that gravel moving. And then that old slick-headed female, she comes in there and lays them eggs. Well, now that slick-headed female, she was the prize one of the whole bunch, because she was generally carried with her two big old strands of roe with her. So they get in there, and we get them suckers out. And if it looked like we was going to be fishing that wire again that night, the creek was on a rise a little bit, we'd open that bottom gate up down there and let them suckers come back in, and we sort of ease back up that campfire. When we got up there, we clean out a bunch of them suckers, get them big old pans out, fill them up full of peanut oil or fat hog fat lard, get that thing real hot, scale them suckers down, take the sides off, and sort of gash them a little bit. Had to put that skin side down on a good old piece of wood there. Take a real sharp knife and cut it about maybe an eighth of an inch right down to that skin. Because that sucker's got a forked bone in him just like that. He looked like a devil's pitchfork sticking out there. So you gash that sucker in there and you salt him a little bit, roll him in meal, and throw him in that hot grease, and he sort of fries up like an accordion. He just goes like that. That skin pulls it up there, and it grease gets in them little old them splits in there. And let me tell you, they ain't nothing sweeter. Now, while all this is going on, them fellas over there taking these sucker roes out. That roe out of there and sort of split a little bit and strip that roe out of that skin, because that skin's going to get a little tough when you cook it. So you put in a big old pan over there and get you a bunch of eggs, mix them in with that roe. Get you some of that Viadil you've been hiding back all winter trying to nurse it to keep them getting bad on you. Chop it in there. Put you a lot of salt and pepper in there with it. Maybe if you got a little of that commodities cheese left or some of that little old yaller cheese left, you throw that in there too. Get you a big old pan out there and sort of dump it in and squizzle it around. In the meantime, you're getting them hush puppies going. Got them roes coming in there real good, so you're going to end up with a real fine feed. Is there any questions? Oh, that's fine. Yes, ma'am. You get in there and sort of scramble them eggs and roes together, a little onion in them, salt and pepper. Now that's the last thing you eat on the way home in the morning, you know, because... Well, it makes it go farther, too. Not only that, it makes it a little bit smoother and easier to cook, because that roe has a tendency to pop on you a little bit if you leave it whole. But we generally get down there and maybe make that first run in the evening and lay back and wait till about midnight when that second run comes through. And then, like I say, if it ain't too cold and the wood ain't run out, we'll go on and make maybe that third run.
Now, I've never seen a sucker fish. Are we talking
about salt water? No, we're talking about salt water. He looks sort of like a carp. A carp's got a mouth that's sort of round and sticks out in front. Well, a sucker's got a mouth, but he's like a vacuum cleaner. this tube sort of lays down like that in him.
That's a freshwater fish.
Yeah, he's all strictly freshwater fish. Now, I've been fishing over at the dam here at Apalachicola, well over there, and I work at Florida State Hospital now, and I'm a drug alcohol counselor over there. And I fish before I go to work and after work, and sometimes during work, my secretary don't catch me. But I've been getting a few of my cast net over there when I'm fishing for mullets. I came in the other day, I had 15 big old red roe suckers. Red horse sucker, I should say, but they had some red roes in them. Now, this late in the year for them to be having roe in them. But I'd fight anybody for them right now. It's an off time of the season, and this boy says to me, "What you going to do with that fish?" I said, I tell you one thing, son, you ain't getting it.
Right. Well, WR told us about the process years ago doing it. Mm-hmm. Arthur, will you bring us up to date? They still fish for suckers, but not in quite the same way.
We fish in Hamlet in a pond with a net, fish net. We just drive stakes in the ground and let the suckers run into the net, and they hang up with their gills. And we do it with a boat instead of wading in the 25-degree weather. I think it's a lot more convenient.
Yeah, but he takes an awful lot out of it, too.
Is the rest of the procedure as far as having a big party connected?
Right.
That's the same. The essential part.
Right. On the hill. Yeah.
You know, we've been integrated here lately, though. An awful lot of women showing up with these sucker feeds.
Does this change the process?
Some parts of it.
Why don't you tell us about those parts? I know, but some of these folks may not.
Years ago, when we went sucker fishing, well, really, I only went sucker fishing like WR talking about one time. But we'd always strip buck naked and jump in. At 25-degree weather.
When Arthur and his wife invited me to go sucker fishing in January, I was a little leery, but then I discovered that they now have this boat process, and that I did not have to take all my clothes off to go after these fish.
Now, you wouldn't like to try that old time again, would you?
Right now, 25-degree water sounds pretty good. Let's let Bobby Johns tell us a little of his story, because he has some interesting things to talk about. He's done yet another quite unusual type of fishing when he was a young man. Not that he isn't still, but a few years ago.
Thank you, Patricia. I do feel kind of old right now. I'm sitting here starving to death. I tell you, they are done got me hungry. That was kind of the reason I went fishing. Was that imagination I had of frying those fish up at the end of the program. We didn't have a lot of fancy tackle, and part of the theory of living where I did and the way I did was just seeing if you could survive. They told me it was a game, but I think they were serious about it. But we took a lot of attitudes that we better try to get us some fish or whatever we was doing. But our process was what we call root fishing. Some folks call it grabbling. And the process there is very simple. You kind of shucked off and went in. And we tried to do that this, though, in a little warmer climate of the year. But the idea was to go along the banks under the roots and in the gator dens and those places where fish like to hide.